Hey everybody, and welcome to the very first ever Monday Night Live. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I am so happy to be joined by my friend from America, Sean Ross Sapp. Sean, we're finally here. The cat's out of the bag. We are going to be talking to each other every Monday for these fine people.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I've done some outside stuff before, but not really in a committed sense, so to speak, and I've scaled back a lot of my guest appearances. I mean, obviously, you Europeans keep dragging me out. You all keep on bringing me over, and I'm rather enjoying it. I told you off the air I had no idea how small my footprint was in Europe until I was on shows like this. And it's like, oh, okay, there's a completely different audience that I didn't realize that I had been exposed to, or vice versa.
Well, see, but I feel like it's nicer for you because, like, I remember when I worked, you know, we'll get into your history in a second, but, like, when I was working at What Culture, like, because when I got to What Culture, I was very kind of clear about, I don't really want to be a character, just because if I'm doing interviews and I'm doing, like, spoken word tours and stuff like that, it's just difficult for me to explain that. You know, like if I'm doing a tour with like Goldberg and I'm like, I actually have a cardboard belt, Goldberg, have you seen it? So I'm just going to stay away from it. So I wasn't even like one of the big characters, but whenever I would go to like the States, a couple of people started recognizing me and shouting my name, which I thought was bizarre. But most people were just like, who the fuck is this Scottish guy? Like, who is this? The first time I ever did a podcast for What Culture, I was called the Scottish Retard. So it was a lovely way to begin.
Oh my gosh.
Begin. But yeah, because you've been on Quizlemania, I think, 371 times now. So
yeah. This week will be 372.
372. And you've won like 93% of the times that you've been on.
Yes, I have a very good percentage there. Didn't win tag team with Denise, but you know what? It is what it is. But
and you didn't get shafted like I did when I was on that show. When the bane of my existence, Kelly, came up again.
Somebody asked me to say one nice thing about Kelly, and I said, she does a better Thez press than Lou Thez did.
I mean, my favorite memory of Kelly, because I hated her. I just detested everything that she stood for.
She wasn't good.
She was terrible. And her theme song was terrible. I'm gay, so I have no interest in what she looks like. So
yeah.
So you don't have that part. But I remember being in this like bar in Glasgow, and it was, I can't remember the pay-per-view, but basically it was her and Beth Phoenix, and she beat Beth Phoenix for the title. And one of my friends had to leave the bar, because he said he was going to throw a glass because he was that annoyed.
Yeah.
That's what she brings out.
Yeah, and a couple years ago, one of our first stories that got a lot of attention, Alex Pawlowski. Big shout out to him. He does Sour Graps on Fightful Select, where it's his own like negative review because he finds the negative in anything. He ran an article about her on that WAGS reality show getting permission to marry her husband from beyond the grave by test.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's serious. There's a clip. There's an article. Check it out. But right around that time was when she popped up on a Raw appearance. And I asked a bunch of people, like, is she coming back? What's going on? And I got like a unanimous response from like six people who work backstage. And they're like, we like her. She's nice. She can't keep up with these girls now. Like, she couldn't then. She definitely isn't now. And I felt bad even reporting that because it is an inherently negative story, but that's sometimes what you got to report. And everybody was like, is she coming back? Is she coming back? And vehemently, I had people saying no. And she was told, I guess it's just a different world now. Wild, wild that keeps coming up, that Kelly finds a way to keep creeping back. Eva Marie's that way too, but I thought they at least had something with the Eva Marie walks out and then doesn't wrestle thing.
Yeah, at least like it felt like she was in on the joke of what it was.
Yes.
But I mean, essentially, for people who are listening to this, why are we here? What are we doing? We Sean was saying he doesn't do a lot of kind of outside stuff, but we thought every Monday for 30 to 45 minutes, we can talk about some news, we can talk about some of the stories that Sean's been reporting on, and just have a good time. So I think it's the reaction yesterday was really fun when we announced we're doing this. So since it's the first one, I thought it could be fun. In case somebody's listening to this and doesn't know who you are, maybe, you know, some stupid British person who does not know the glory of Sean Ross Sapp. So what's your story? How did you get involved in wrestling? How did you get to this point where you're essentially one of the, I'm not sucking up to you, but you are one of the key people that report stories now?
Well, I had a couple of aunts actually who were into media, radio, writing, and I lived with one of them at one point. So I always had a knack for writing. Even in my high school yearbook, it says, I want to get into media, I want to get into journalism and all that. But I wasted my 20s. And towards the middle of them, I was like, you know what? If I don't train MMA or wrestling now, when will I? So I started, and pretty early on, I got a pretty severe injury. And I was like, man, I'm not, either I wasn't built for it, or I wasn't going to be able to do it responsibly. So I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to write too. There weren't a ton of people involved in either media space, in wrestling or MMA, that had training experience. And I was managing fighters, managing wrestlers, taping fists, doing commentary, anything I could to get experience for no pay for years and years, like between 2009 and 2014, really. And part of that was me reaching out to Bill Apter of One Wrestling. It was for the January 4th, 2010 Raw. I pitched him a column. He liked it. The original end date for the column was WrestleMania. And then after that, he said, hey, why don't you hang on and do some MMA stuff for me? And it wasn't for pay. It wasn't anything like that. And I just did that to kind of gain experience for 3 or 4 years. I didn't get a ton of like editorial feedback from him, but I got a lot of great stories and experience, and he put me on camera. Being able to be around Bill Apter got me commentary jobs for MMA companies, even got me a couple pro wrestling bookings, and I did some matches here and there. I wanted to get as much experience within those spaces as I possibly could. One, so I would have an idea of what I was talking about, but two, just because learning things is my favorite part of this job. And at that time, I kind of like wanted to be the hot ones guy that just eats chicken and asks people questions. Like,
that's the dream.
That's the dream. I didn't want to be guy who reports a bunch of backstage stuff, because no disrespect to the friends I've made in wrestling that are wrestlers. I don't care that much about having friends that are wrestlers. Like, that's not a goal of mine. Like, I just want to produce fun stuff and learn some stuff. But around 2014, I was like at a bit of a crossroads, and I was like, gosh, I got to make something of this. I was in my late 20s. My wife and I were kind of struggling financially, and I was like, I got to make this my full-time living by the end of this year, or I need to find something else and make this a part-time deal. Well, I did a couple of things like fan-sided, rant sports, a few different paying jobs. I had several of them, actually, and I was still contributing to One Wrestling. And I was doing okay, enough to survive, so to speak, freelancing, a lot of entertainment writing under pseudonyms and stuff like that that was really keeping me afloat. And then I got an offer from What Culture to be their full-time wrestling news guy. And that lasted about 3 weeks before I was fired and told by a guy that I should never write wrestling news again.
I mean, to be fair, 3 weeks is a pretty long time. You should be proud that you lasted 3 weeks. I got fired my first time within 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Because I got hired for a job that didn't exist.
Yeah, so, well, I did too. He didn't have a news position. He being, I'll just say, Matt Holmes, the guy who runs What Culture. He hit me up and he was like, you've been doing some columns for us. Would you like to do news writing for us full time? I said, yeah, I would. What kind of commitment is it? He goes, give me 40 hours a week. You need to quit your other obligations. Work with us full time. You'll be our news guy. And he gave me the amount. It was an amount that not only could I live on, it was the goal amount of money that I wanted to make as a full time job. And I was in tears. I was so happy. Put in my notice.
Aww.
The first day he said, hey, it's 9 a.m. there, and you've already got 3 news stories up. That's all the news slots we have, so slow it down. And I'm like, news doesn't slow down. Like, that doesn't work like that. So he immediately put me back on columns and was like, hey, write these top 10 lists. And no offense, but my subjective opinion on ranking things is not necessarily my strong suit. It's just not. It's just not my thing.
One of the other problems with doing the top 10 list, just to interrupt you quickly, is I did a top 10 list at one point. Well, I did a few. And one of the ones I did, like, because you remember the whole thing was like you would do the list and then you would like put it in like a WordPress and you'd put a photo that you pick and then you would submit it to be, you know, put in. And like somebody had like, my hill to die on was that I thought that it was something to do with Cena and The Rock, and it was something about the 28 match, and it was specifically talking about how great the 28 match was. And like the person who edited it after me put 29 and put the photo from the 29 match, so I looked like an idiot. Because I was like talking about how great this match was. So yeah, there was things like that that popped up a lot that that didn't probably contribute to the success of top 10 lists.
Yeah, it wasn't my thing. It wasn't my strong suit, and that's fine. It's not everything is everybody's strong suit. I could do it fine, but I was astounded at how many pitches got denied for top 10 lists there. Like, especially considering some of the stuff that was coming out, and that's not a disrespect to any of the writers, but within a week or two of working there, I was basically told to dumb down my writing and compared to somebody else. And they said, this is why this guy is a success that works for us. And I looked at it and I was like, man, he talks to your readers like they're second graders. And there are some pretty smart second graders. But man, the reading level for wrestling media is usually above that. Like, I know a lot of people like to rag on wrestling media, but there's some really smart wrestling fans out there, and it didn't sit well with me, but I said, you know what? If that's the job, I'll do it. And about 2 weeks in, I didn't get many responses back from Matt Holmes. And by the third week, he was like, yeah, this isn't going to work out. I'm letting you go. The idea is that he wanted to do a bit of an expansion into the U.S. because what culture was taking off in 2014. So he hired myself and David Bixenspan, and Bixenspan was my editor, because they wanted some news stories to come out after 5 p.m. their time when they left the office. And within like 3 weeks, it was completely dismantled because you didn't get immediate results. And I'll just never forget. I don't ever use negativity to fuel me or anything like that. I'm not one of those people. I like positive reinforcement. But he said, you should figure out something else besides writing wrestling news. It won't work out for you. And I was like, okay. All right. And I felt sorry for myself for about 4 days. And then I got a job at Wrestling Inc., which is the largest wrestling news website in the world. And within a year, I was on screen for them doing their podcasts. And within 2 years, I got an offer from Fightful. And I got the offer from Fightful because of a guy who I worked for a long time, Bill Apter. The founder of Fightful reached out to him and said, who should I bring on? And Bill Apter, without hesitation, said, Sean Ross Sapp. That's who you should have lead your website. He's really good. So for all the negative that happened with What Culture, I think about all that free work that I put in for Bill Apter. The reason that I did it, because I grew up reading him and admiring his work and working with him, finding out he's a great person, and then finding out that to me, he was an even better person by recommending me for that job, is something that I will never forget. Like, that's one of the kindest things anybody's ever done for me, because I'm sure Bill could have just been like, what do you need anybody else for? Just give me the money. Mm-hmm. That's something I'll never forget. And I'll also never forget how I was treated at What Culture. Go ahead. Sorry.
So my story with that, and there are a lot of great writers at What Culture, and I have friends there, so it's not a burial
of
them.
I love Simon Miller. I love.
Oh, he's
that
the
guy.
Best. He's the best. I had people probably know this story anyway, but I'll just tell it. But basically, I'd done Inside the Ropes for free, obviously, because, you know, doing podcasts in 2012, there's no money in it, and we did it for like 2 years, me and Robert Duffin, and then Robert was like, oh, there's no money in this and we're spending a lot of time on it. I'm going to go back to college or university and become a primary school teacher. Fair. You know, that's probably the sensible thing to do. So I then went to Canada for a year, sort of like just finding myself, I think that's what people call it.
Sure.
And then came back and did a tour with Sting in the UK. And the tour with Sting got Matt Holmes' attention. He was like, you know, I want to offer you a job. And I was like, okay. And he was like, you're going to be a content producer. I was like, okay, sure. What am I doing? And he was like, you're going to set up interviews for us to do. And I was like, okay. But the problem was, like, the only way to really set up interviews with American wrestlers is when they're in the UK. So it's not a big job. So I remember getting on, so I would be online at 9 a.m. And within like 2 weeks, I was like, I'm trying to like find stuff to do to sort of explain my wage. And so then I got fired within 2 weeks. It wasn't working out. And then
that's the scariest thing. Sorry to cut you off, but I was looking at the views that my articles got and knowing what they paid out freelance before that. And I'm like, man, am I justifying my wage? And that led me to now. We hired an MMA editor last month. And I said straight up, like, hey, I wanted Saturdays off. Covering MMA was getting to be too time consuming for me. Don't look at your views and think that you have to justify your wage. Produce good content, and that will eventually do it. Mm-hmm. If you have the creative freedom and you have the ability to do it, eventually it will justify that wage on its own. And that was something that consumed me at What Culture, because I was so nervous because of the culture. I don't want to say the culture, just his attitude. That was it.
And the thing is, and I don't want to bury him too much, but I mean, I'm gonna. But the funniest thing was when he hired me, because I was like, you know that I do Inside the Ropes, and like that's not going to change. I'm going to keep doing tours. Yeah. I'm going to keep doing, you know, a couple of podcasts there. Is that okay? Yeah, that's fine. No problem. So they hired me October 2015, and then in December 2015, we announced our uncensored tour with Scott Steiner in March of 2016, which was a riot, especially when he threatened to fuck my mum on stage when she was in the audience, but that's another story for another day. But basically, Matt Holmes, when he found out the Scott Steiner tour had been announced, said, you need to let me buy Inside the Ropes. I said, what?
Oh, boy.
Was it, you need to let me buy it? And I was like, even I, like, who was quite naive at that point, I was like, this is a bad idea. because already I'm like, ooh. So I said, look, what about we, like, see how it goes for the next 9 months, and if for 9 months I feel comfortable, I'm willing to revisit the idea of you doing it. And then I was fired for the second time, and then brought back again. And this was like a cycle of over 2 years, and I'm different to you in that negativity can really fuel me to to do things. And I was at What Culture, and I had a lot of fun there, and, you know, especially when WCPW came around, the wrestling promotion, some of the funnest times I've ever had was there. But by May 2017, when I was like, I'm done, I'm out, it was just like, I don't care if I fail on my own, I don't care if Inside the Ropes fails, I can't do this anymore. And I think that when you do that, it's like, Heyman said it in one of the DVDs that WWE did, he was like, if you're afraid of failure, you can't succeed.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's like, it's cheesy, but like, it's true. Because
it's what kept me away from pursuing this for so long, whether it be part-time or full-time. I knew that I had the ability and the talent to do it, but I was afraid of to me, it's like when I haven't been on the bike for a few months, or I haven't been on the treadmill for a few months, and I'm afraid of how bad my own cardio is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I know I can do it, but I'm afraid, like, what if I don't? And that couldn't be more true.
It's like anything. Like, I remember, so when I did a short Starcast for, it was the first Double or Nothing, and it was, and Cody and Dustin had the match, and then the next day was my panel with Dustin, and I knew, I was like, as much as I am proud of Inside the Ropes, I'm not really well known in America in wrestling at all, so Inside the Ropes wasn't going to be the draw that it maybe would be in the UK if it was a UK thing. And and then I found out like 2 hours before the show with Dustin that directly opposed to us was Jericho doing a live podcast.
Oh.
And I was like, we're dead. We are dead. And Dustin could, there's not, we could fuck a dog on stage. Nobody would be in that room. Like, they're in Jericho's room. And then luckily, Jericho, I don't think he'd ever agreed to do a live podcast. So he ended up like sending in a thing where he was like, I'm not doing it because I'm a heel. And, but I remember.
Was that the day after?
Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's definitely not how it went down for Jericho. He had committed.
Had committed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was in touch with the StarCast people for that. That was not a pleasant situation at all.
I can imagine. Because I remember Conrad looked, I've never seen Conrad as kind of uncomfortable as I saw him that weekend. But But like, so we were doing the Dustin one, and I remember, and this is going back to what you were saying about, you know, the fear thing, like in my mind I was like, we're about to walk out here, and we were in the big room, like the big back room, and I was like, there's going to be 10 people. And like, I'm quite lucky that like any shows I've ever done, 99% of them have had like hundreds of people, which is very easy to do your job if you're doing a Q&A in front of a crowd or a spoken word thing. But I was like, this is going to be the worst thing. And then we got out there and we started doing it in front of the 10 people and it was fine. And then when people realized Jericho wasn't coming, we got 300 people in.
Yeah.
And they just walked in. But before that, I was just like, how am I going to do this in front of 10 people? And then, and they're inevitably going to be like, fuck's that accent about? Who's that guy? Like, which is the usual question. But anyway, and the roads have led to here. And yeah, and the Fightful stuff, I feel like every day, every 2 days, you see something has been broken by Fightful. And like, it's a respected thing, which must be cool to kind of be in that position now where if somebody sees it's a story from you, they're not going, I need to check from somebody else as well to make sure.
Yeah, and it did used to be like that. And that's why I try my best to be as friendly to people that are coming up as possible, because I was that guy. I mean, I had been writing for years before I broke any news, but I was mainly doing aggregating and columns and some podcasts, but I got a lot of that. Well, it's not Meltzer, it's not Mike Johnson, or it's an internet wrestling guy. Why should we believe them for a long time? But the fact that I can't think of a time when any of our stories have been quote unquote debunked by a wrestler or anything like that. And that's a piece of advice that I give anybody that's coming up. Never make up news, never editorialize news to fit a story, because it's never been easier for somebody to debunk it. And I have a ton of respect for the Meltzers and the Johnsons and all that who did this before it was as easy as it is for a lot of us, where I can message a WWE wrestler instantly. I don't have to have a phone call with them. I don't get to go see them at the arena. I can message them. I can say, what are your thoughts on this? What are your feelings on this? And about 80% of the time, I'll get a response, because most of them know I'm not out to get a gotcha on them or something like that. I'm trying to take the temperature of a situation. And it is. Like, I really like that we are well-regarded, because my boss took an incredible chance on me. I had like 2,500 Twitter followers, and he was talking with some of the biggest names in wrestling media, and he went with me after one good conversation that I made a nice impression on. And it makes me feel good to know that I helped reinforce that decision, because when I took over this spot, I wasn't sure if I was ready. I felt like I was like almost getting away with something. And then the first week I was like, no, I'm really good at this. I can do this. This is the spot I was meant for. And yeah, it's almost unanimously positive for me. There are very rare instances of cattiness and bad stuff, but
it's nice to be a part of that, right? Like, somebody said to me a couple of weeks ago, they were like, Inside the Ropes is like one of the only places that hasn't had a scandal. It's like, well,
yeah,
hopefully that's a lifelong thing. I mean, I've not done anything, so.
Hopefully, and you can't really control what a lot of other people on your staff do or say or anything like that, but
I mean, the thing for us, like when the whole Undertaker thing happened, where we couldn't come over. I mean, that was the worst thing that's ever happened. And I remember just being like, "We're fucked," because nobody's going to believe us anymore on anything.
Yeah.
Because like because I remember like people were like, because we refunded everybody who had bought a general ticket to see a Q&A because he wasn't going to be there. Luckily, Foley stepped in and fucking saved the day.
He's great.
I will never hear a bad word about Mick Foley after him coming in for like a lot less money than he needed to help us out. But like in my mind, I was like, because we had a contract, obviously we wouldn't.
Yes.
But the problem is that if he's in a dispute with Vince McMahon, he doesn't have to come. And if he doesn't come, I'm not going to be able to fight it. If I do fight it, I'm not going to be in this industry probably anymore, because if you fight them, and I remember being like, people are never going to trust us anymore. But I think that, you know, the honesty and transparency that we can have as people in wrestling is the best thing that you can have, because people are able to relate to it more.
Yeah.
That, you know, and situations happen.
It's a weird situation to parse, because I'm covering fake pro wrestling, and it's the thing that I love most in the world. Like, I don't love anything more than pro wrestling except for learning more about pro wrestling. And you can't say anything negative, because somebody will say, oh, well, why aren't you being negative about this? And ultimately, I'm like, man, I take my objectivity very, very seriously. I have friends that are wrestlers, and they understand. I've not had one person angrily come at me like, oh, you didn't like – well, except for Cameron. Cameron did once. Cameron, her representative is like, we don't want to do an interview with you because you didn't like her matches. And I said, well, you're not doing an interview with me because I'm not going to pretend I liked her matches.
I love the whole thing about, like, she was off for 4 years and she really loves wrestling and wants to come back, and she'd had zero matches since she left.
Yeah, and that's usually how it happens. But I've got friends in the wrestling business that will joke. They'll be like, you tore me a new one on your review. And I was like, well, the match sucked. I'm sorry. It wasn't good. I think you're a great person, or else I wouldn't talk to you outside of getting news or interviews and stuff. But it is one of those situations where it's not a sport, but there are serious things that happen within it that should be covered that way. But I also want to be an entertaining person along with that, because we're covering a form of entertainment. When I did the Quizzlemania stuff and people heard I was on What Culture, they said, oh, why didn't you do videos with like Adam or any of the three other Adams there? And I was like, well, I was before that. I didn't get the opportunity to do that. When that stuff exploded, that was well before me. I did on-screen stuff somewhere else, and it was really straightforward until really the last few years when we started to do some skits and stuff. And a lot of people didn't even know that I could do any of that until Quizzlemania, because, I mean, I am usually reviewing shows. So that's also one of the things I love about pro wrestling is – I can be a straightforward – I even hate to use the term journalist, because when anybody calls themselves a journalist anymore, so many people take it as being pretentious when it's not. It's just a job title. I can do that, but I can also review something ridiculous, or I can act ridiculous but still hopefully maintain some credibility in that space. But – ultimately, I'm just like, you know what? If it makes me happy and it makes our viewers happy, that's what matters, as long as it's honest.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, when was the first time that we met? I think I'm pretty sure it was
last year.
Double or not.
Last year.
Because I'm pretty sure that we met first at a media scrum when I was entertained by your facial expressions.
Oh my God.
This guy. We won't name him, but like, it was like there was a bunch of us at a scrum for AEW, and like there was one person who was like, because, you know, when you do a lot of these conference calls and stuff, you're used to horrible questions that sometimes come up. And I'm always fascinated by them, because I almost want to find the person and be like, what was the aim with that question? Like, what did you want to get from it? Because I just don't get it. But, do you have a message for your fans in X or X? You know, fine. But there was this particular person who had questions that were so bad, and I felt like nobody else in the room was acknowledging that this was really happening. And then you rolled your eyes, and I was like, yes, somebody. So,
I had never really traveled for this job before that. Never. One of the reasons I like this job so much is I can work 20 feet away from my bedroom in a home office. And I was nervous, man. Like, I didn't have good equipment. I didn't do anything. You were a very welcome face there, and you had been very nice, as, you know, as did Stephen Larson, as did a lot of other guys from the UK. There was no, like, negativity. There's always people that say, yeah, people in the wrestling media world always fight. There has been zero of that in person in anything that I've ever been through. Nobody's been anything but nice. Nobody in any space has been anything but nice at these wrestling shows. But in that situation, I had been dealing with StarCast PR for weeks, and very few PR companies are easier to deal with than those guys.
Yeah.
They were very kind and very generous and tried to make everything happen that they could. And this one person was very, I would say, very entitled in what they got. Because they walked up to the guy, Derek, who was running the PR, and Derek is as polite as possible.
Nicest man alive.
Pro as possible. Great dude. Great work. He was like, I didn't get here in time, and this happened, and this happened. And he was blaming Derek for a lot of – well, I said a he. Well, he was blaming Derek for a lot of his own shortcomings and a lot of his own errors, so to speak.
Well, we should mention that the thing that made this so unique is that – So it's after the show, and we all go to this room, and we don't know who we're getting. We don't know what's happening. And then, like, Jericho, Cody, Brandy, Dustin, Tony Khan, all these people are there, but they're at different points of the room. So you kind of have to, like, go, oh, am I going to stay here? Or am I going to go there? And you're going to miss somebody. But, like, I think, I don't know about you, but I was just like, whoa, they've given us big people. Like, they've given us, like, all the top names. So most people were kind of like, this is great. We're going to get some good stuff. But this person was not that way.
So I was placed about four seats away from them in the media area. And, that's one of my favorite things about covering AEW shows. Like, I'm going there thinking, okay, yeah, you know what? I'm going to be watching this show alone. And then I'm like, wait a second. I know everybody up here. These are colleagues and people that I really like. And I get to enjoy a show or hate a show with them. And this guy was complaining about the seating, and there was not a bad seat in that house.
And the media section that AEW give you is tremendous. Like, in terms of where, like, I've been to other shows with other companies where, like, I was given, like, a seat at, like, the 300s or whatever. And you're like, and you're a bit bummed because you can't see it as well. But, like, in AEW, it's prime.
Oh, I had to take my glasses to SummerSlam for sure. But AEW was very good in that regard. And this guy was just complaining. I was like, ah, all right. So then we get there, and man, I don't even know if I should mention the question because it'll expose him. And I maybe he's a nice guy. We've got some mutual friends. But the thing that he did, it was like so – I don't like the term mark at all. I hate it. It's a stupid term. But in my head, I rolled my eyes. I was like, oh. Mark. And it wasn't because I thought he was a mark. It's because I thought everybody else was going to think that he was a mark. I was like, ah, oh, somebody's going to call him a mark. And I just abbreviated it in my mind to eliminate somebody's going to think that he is a. And I was just like, oh, man, why would you? And I'm very tolerable of stuff like that. If somebody wants to start up a wrestling outlet and report about wrestlers' feelings on ducks or geese, and they get on a media call and they say, what did you think about this goose last week? That's their outlet. They can do what they want. But this was just very clearly a situation where it was like, oh, this guy. It was a very odd one. I feel bad. I feel bad that I even rolled my eyes about it, because I know that people have done that about me in the past.
Oh, 100%.
It's just the way it is. But yeah, I did look over and saw you, and I was like, well, at least he gets it.
Well, because the day before, look, he maybe he probably is a really nice guy, so I'm not saying anything bad about him, but I'm about to. StarCast had this weird thing where, like, there was an area that you could stand, and they were just going to bring people out to get interviews, but like this was like the first day, so people weren't really aware of it yet. So there was like, I think like Arn Anderson came out and gave us like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Yeah. So then out came, oh, what was the guy who had the match with Bret Hart,
Tom McGee. I missed that Tom too.
McGee. So Tom McGee's there, right? And Tom McGee, God bless him, does not look like.
No.
You know, it's almost Lex Luger levels of difference. Like, it's really different. I think he's an old guy. He had a car crash. But he's a very happy man. You know, just seemed very happy to be.
He got gang beaten.
That was what it was. Yeah, that was. He had a really bad attack happen to him. But he seemed really happy to be there. And, you know, that people were kind of, you know, just talking to him and wanting to hear about him. So this person is there as well. And I'm trying to ask some questions. And I'm aware that, like, it's Tom McGee, so it's not going to be a massive YouTube hit video, but I thought people would get a kick out of it. So I'm asking him questions. And then this person who was at the scrum the next day said, Tom, what would you say to your legions of fans that think that today, and right here, right now, is the time for Tom McGee comeback?
Oh.
And, like, I felt so awkward because, like, when you're British, most of the time you're taking the piss. So, like, if I was like, I was really just like, please don't think that this moron is what everybody is like. And Tom was just like so nice, and he was like, I don't think that's really something that's on the cards. And
he almost died, man.
Mm-hmm.
He almost died. He was 61 when this scrum happened. Hadn't wrestled in 30 years. Oh man.
And I think
I didn't know that.
And I think the guy who was asking the question, I don't think he meant it to be, I think he was just trying to get something, you know, and he was just trying to work an angle, but it was just, it was the worst thing you could ask this guy who clearly has been through something. And that then led into the scrum.
And not only that, I mean, Tom McGee gained that level of notoriety because of how bad he was.
Yeah.
Because he was not good at wrestling, and Bret Hart made him look passable enough for a few minutes that a lost match between those two became so famous. Like, that's, he's known for not being good at wrestling. Oh, that's a bummer. I mean, yeah.
But anyways, and then we ended up like hanging out like three times in a row in the space of like 4 months, because it was like,
yeah,
Vegas, Toronto, Chicago.
Chicago. Yeah.
So when we were able to travel to things, remember those days? They were great.
Yeah, that was what I said on actually a thing recently that I filmed. I did a FightfulSelect.com Q&A, and basically I put it in the can for when I go on vacation, and I said, hey, name somebody in wrestling media or wrestling, and I'll tell you what kind of experience I've had with them. And somebody mentioned your name, and I was like, yeah, Kenny and Alicia Atout specifically, I see everywhere. I mean... I have spent time with you all in more time zones than I have my own wife, because I've never been on the West Coast with her before. And I've seen you guys Central, Eastern, Pacific time zone all 1 year. And I mean, that it was, for me, I have a lot of social anxiety in person, and a lot of that I mean, a lot of people, it surprises some people, but I do. So seeing welcoming faces like Alicia Atout and yourself, and even being introduced to Sandra, like those are very nice things for me. And especially when I see familiar faces in that area. And my wife was actually with me in Toronto when we met. And I was like, oh, hey, here's Kenny. Met him in Chicago. But it's nice to see people, you know. It's, now I don't get any of that because I don't get to leave the house, but.
Yeah, now we're just stuck on Zoom all the time. But yeah, no, it's a weird thing, because like, I made a decision, because when I left What Culture, one of the main things for me was the YouTube channel. You know, this YouTube channel needs to take off. So, you know, whenever, it's the thing that I don't know if people realize this, but whenever I'm at a media thing or whatever, I am looking to get enough content that will pay for the flight that I have paid for to go over. So like for me, it's a big deal. Like it's a,
yes.
So, but I mean, to your point as well, I've never had a bad experience with a wrestling journalist person who I've been at these things. They're so friendly, like whether it's Bill Pritchard or Dominic from WrestleZone or Nick Houseman, everybody's super nice. The only thing I struggle with, right, and this is a me thing. So you know when you go to shows and you sit in the media section,
mm-hmm.
Probably not the right term, but I still completely mark out of stuff. Like I
do.
So whenever I sit down at a show, my media hat comes off for the time that I'm watching the show.
Yeah.
But whenever I'm in the media section, I have to hold back. And it's very strange because I'm a very vocally aggressive person when I'm watching something that I'm enjoying. But I really have to hold it back because I'm like, it's not the time. It's not the time to shout motherfucker at someone. Like, it's just not. But if I was just like at home all day.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, I don't really like attending a lot of wrestling shows, because usually if I'm attending it, I'm not covering it, because WWE just doesn't, they don't provide media access unless it's like a junket like we had in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an often thing, but AEW does it all the time. Like you can get an interview there. Maybe if you're lucky, you can do scrums and all that. It is very hard during AEW's pay-per-view content to not react and scream, wow. Or holy crap, because usually something crazy happens. So I'm definitely with you there.
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, we've got three stories. Every week we're gonna have three stories that we're gonna talk about, and you're gonna have looked into, and we'll go into them. But before we do talk about any of them, I want to ask you about All Out. All Out's been a weird show in terms of reaction. Like it seems like a lot of people see it as a thumbs in the middle show. What do you think of it overall? Do you think it feels like this was the weakest pay per view they've had so far out of the great ones that they've had? Where do you kind of see the show?
I thought it was the weakest pay-per-view that they've done, and it was still pretty solid. The humidity very clearly got to the wrestlers. That was a main complaint from the wrestlers to me. and the fans. I had multiple fans that hit me up, probably about a half dozen of them saying the humidity killed us. I know a lot of people think it was the Matt Hardy thing, and that couldn't have helped, but it was the humidity was just killer there. And Tony Khan says they can do indoor, but they just don't want to. And they've been encouraging hydrating. But then I got people telling me, yeah, but Propel water costs $6 here. So we don't want to spend all that money to stay hydrated. So there's a lot of good. There's a lot of bad. I thought Thunder Rosa had an amazing performance, which makes me happy because interviewed her on Fightful last week.
I saw that. Good for her.
I wasn't getting any AEW interviews at the time, so I was like, you know what? I'm going to hit up every single person that isn't contracted to them, but it's going to be on this show. So I got Cardona and Thunder Rosa for that. Then they give me Ricky Starks, and I was like, all right, okay, fair game. But I thought that was pretty good. The Casino Battle Royal, I thought it sucked. I thought it was messy. I do like the fact that they had people come out individually. That was pretty cool. That was a lot better. Young Bucks and Jurassic Express ruled. That was a fantastic story. Tooth and Nail. You either loved it or hated it, and I loved it. I thought it was really...
The bit where Reba had the banana peel on her head, I died. Yes. It was so good.
And her screaming about Britt getting stabbed. And by the way, Britt doing that?
I know,
right? Amazing. Amazing. The DDT on top of the ATV or whatever it was, the neck breaker on the floor, really great. The Matt Hardy spot was gross. They should not have let that continue, but they were backed into a corner where they did a stipulation there, and I can't feel worse for Matt Hardy, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, but Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa ruled. The eight-man tag was fine, but it was a dynamite match. FTR, Page, and Omega needed a crowd, really badly needed a crowd, and not a 15% full crowd. If anything, a loud crowd. Jericho and Orange Cassidy, whatever. And I thought Moxley and MJF was really good, but also needed a crowd. It was okay. It was by normal wrestling pay-per-view standards, it was good. By AEW standards, it was the weakest they'd done, I thought.
I think one of the things that didn't help is that when we were on the conference call with Tony Khan before, he was like, this is going to be a great show. And you're like, yes. Okay, I'm in. And it's. I thought it was okay. I was like whelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed. I wasn't overwhelmed. I was just whelmed. But yeah,
they could have cut time like 3 minutes off the main event, like 5 minutes off Mimosa Mayhem, probably 10 minutes off the tag match. An eight-man tag didn't need to be 15 minutes. Really, they could have. As much as I love the women's title match, it could have been a couple minutes shorter. The Battle Royal could have been shorter. There was probably a solid 40 minutes they could have cut from this show and made it way more digestible.
Well, the other thing is, we're just based on UK people, is that when we're watching the pay-per-view, it's 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. usually. And I was over at a friend's house, and we put on all the kind of pre-stuff. And it's like, this felt like WrestleMania in some ways. And I don't mean that in a good way, because like you had a 30-minute red carpet, then you had a 30-minute countdown show, then you had another 30-minute red carpet, then you had a one-hour buy-in, and then you had a four-hour pay-per-view. So if you're in the UK, it's like 5 a.m. when it's finishing. So it just felt like by the end it was like fatigue that you had. But
especially with those in attendance.
Yeah, right?
Like, imagine how they feel.
Sitting on the sun. Well, let's get straight into the stories then. One of them is obviously the Matt Hardy situation, because everybody's talking about it. And it's just crazy. We've got Rebby Hardy, who's very angry at AEW for what's going on. We've got Tony Khan trying to, you know, say that everything's fine, and he's been to hospital and he's been tested and everything's fine. What is going on?
I reached out to Matt Hardy immediately and have not heard back since. So I would get the feeling that nobody's talked to Matt Hardy. I'm not going to pretend like we're BFFs or anything, but I've known Matt Hardy for years. Reached out and have not heard back. I would be inclined to believe his wife, but also people should probably look at the phrasing. She said like 1,000% he has a concussion. I feel like if that was specifically diagnosed, she would have said he's diagnosed with a concussion. I don't know what he has. I do know that he was discharged. And I do know that even before this, Rebby was not fond of Matt working with Sammy based on how things unfolded last time. There was heat on Sammy Guevara for that chair spot alone. I don't know who – I haven't heard of any blame being cast for this, because how they land is how they land. It's really tough to control that here. Mm-hmm. But as far as keeping that match going, that's got to be a lesson AEW learns. They can't do that again.
Because one of the great areas is that they said – Tony Khan had said at the post-show scrum that, like, Dr. Samson had checked out Matt and done a test and – made sure he was good to go. And I think a lot of people are wondering, how can you, is there a way to diagnose if someone's okay concussion wise within like 3 minutes?
No, absolutely not. And I, of everything that I have heard about Tony Khan and my interactions with him, I believe that he truly cares about the well-being of not just his wrestlers, but the fans. I've never had any interaction with him or heard any story about him that indicates to me otherwise. Until this, he called for the stop of the match. That was a good move. I don't know how they would have gotten around that from a story perspective, but at that point, I know that Matt Hardy, I know him, I know his personality type. He is very much legit. Matt Hardy will not die. Matt Hardy will get this done type of thing. You can't listen to him in that sense. You gotta hold him back. You gotta hold him out. And it's not something that would have made him happy. And he is a very creatively satisfied person, but you got to hold him out on stuff like that for his own health.
And I mean, I guess it seems like from an outsider perspective that there's a missing piece of the jigsaw that's somewhere. Yeah. And that's, I mean, and we're, you know, Tony Khan said that Matt will be, because Tony had said that Matt was being taken home, but then he's also going to be on Dynamite on Wednesday.
And he drives to the shows from North Carolina to Florida.
How long is that? How long a drive is that?
It's like, I think, 8 hours.
Wow.
And he doesn't want to do planes, because he wants to be safe for his family.
Yeah. I mean,
and go figure.
Because how did they have a lot of other stuff planned, do you know, between, because obviously they went straight to the finish when they tried to redo it, but I mean, it looked like they probably had a lot more stuff they wanted to do before they did that finish.
Yeah, from what I understand, they had a lot more laid out to get to that point, but I feel bad for Matt Hardy, because he debuts, no audience, Blood and Guts gets canceled, but for him, that was a positive, because Stadium Stampede was better for him. Mm-hmm. But then, he drops his gimmick, because it's not working. Then he's got his match set with Sammy Guevara. Sammy gets suspended. Sammy comes back, throws a chair at his face. They have the blow off, and time gets cut severely from it. Then they do this as a make good, and this happens. Like, bad luck around every corner, and there's all these dopes that are like, he should have stayed with WWE. Yeah, why? So we could get cut in April? Like, the yeah. guy is very clearly creatively satisfied. And this is better than him doing nothing. The only reason he got those spots with Randy Orton was because he was leaving the company and they wanted to write him off. So it's a catch 22 there, and we'll just have to hear how Matt feels about it.
I mean, because it almost feels like, are they going to go back to the Matt and Sammy situation again? It feels like they probably will, because you don't want to end it that way. But is that wise? There's a lot of questions, I think.
I get the feeling Rebby isn't going to want him to. And I don't know Rebby personally, but based on what I heard, she was not happy that was continuing anyway.
Well, when we did a tour with Matt in late 2016, and he was like prime broken time.
Yeah.
Rebby came with him, and you know, and I've met her, and like, I know people, some people love her, some people don't, but like, nobody is more sort of like, nobody cares more about the well-being of Matt Hardy than she does. Like, exactly. She will cut you if you do into him. Like, she is dead serious. And that's a great person to have behind you. But yeah, I feel bad for her, because watching that at home must have been rough for her.
Yeah, I would say so. Terrifying.
But yes, I guess we'll see what happens on Wednesday. But I mean, I guess it is more lighthearted than the Matt Hardy situation. The whole situation with the third-party apps and WWE, Vince put out the text. Was that a text?
It was a letter. It was an actual letter. I have the letter, which he signed Vince.
So he puts out the letter.
With a signature at the bottom, mind you.
With a signature. And he tells people he does not want them doing any more third-party stuff. Now, and I mean, I think Meltzer had said on like the Observer board that like the Lana Instagram endorsement was the problem. Now, former Rusev Miro, he's not happy with Meltzer about that. What can you tell us about this whole third-party app? Is like, what was the straw that broke the camel's back? Because obviously AJ Styles has been very vocal in his streams. There's seems a few things you could point at that made this happen.
AJ was the one I heard about, but I heard about it Thursday, and I know that they had a call the Sunday prior. So to me, I don't think there was a straw that broke the camel's back, because this is one of those situations where I've got five or six people in the company saying, no, it was this, no, it was this, no, it was this. So it was a lot of things. Personally, I get the feeling talking to people that Vince saw that cameo money and was like, oh, okay, well, why aren't we doing that? Well, the reason you're not doing it is because Roman Reigns isn't going to make $400 on there. He's going to make 40 after his cut to WWE. It is very foggy right now about the real name being allowed, disallowed thing. Look at a girl like Jessamyn Duke. Jessamyn Duke is trademarked probably by WWE, but she was in the UFC before this. She was. It's not like she hadn't done anything, but she game streams as herself. But as herself is also as that girl who head kicked Billy Kay on Monday Night Raw last week.
Mm-hmm.
There has been no clarification given to people broadly that I've seen. And I asked WWE and they outright did not answer that. And that was the most important question. However, nobody that I have spoken to intends to stop streaming, cameo, anything like that, and are very much saying, we're going to need to renegotiate our deals if that's the case. If they want to keep this from us, they're going to have to renegotiate. Now, originally, the word was that WWE didn't want sensitive information leaking during streams, but it's far more broad than that. It was a lot of people during the pandemic getting bold with Twitch and Cameo and TikTok and advertisements. But the Lana deal is not a new one. That's been around for quite a while. Like, she's had that partnership for quite a long time. And the specific terminology Vince used was, it is imperative we promote and protect our brand in every conceivable way. Some of you are engaged with outside third parties using your name and likeness in ways that are detrimental to our company. These activities need to be terminated within the next 30 days. And he said that they could be fined, suspended, or terminated. And says that it's necessary in order to rebuild their brand as they enter the next phase of growth in WWE.
So I have some questions.
Sure.
So, because I know that Paige had, she's changed her Twitch name, right, to Soraya, and she doesn't intend to stop what she's doing.
She shouldn't.
No. So, I mean, legally, if you know, Wrestler X has signed a deal, a standard WWE contract, I'm guessing it's not in their contract that they're not allowed to do this stuff. So really the onus would need to be on WWE legally to renegotiate with these people if they decide they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, and it comes down to intellectual property. And if she's not using any of their intellectual property, they cannot legally prevent her from doing that. Now, that's why, how I mentioned Jessamyn Duke. If that's if that is trademarked by WWE, well, or AJ Styles, who's had that name forever, they might need, like, she might need to go by OK Gamer or 8-Bit Amazon or something like that, which is weird because she owns that name. Now, if she leaves WWE, she can still use her own name because it's her own name, but it's that weird situation. That was a common thing that was brought up to me was, we are independent contractors. They can't keep us from doing anything. That's why a lot of people that do interviews with me, they don't even bother clearing it with PR. Like, they prefer that, but they can't prevent that because they can do what they want. They're independent contractors and cannot be limited legally. Now, Paige, this is all speculatory on my part, but I have heard some of the numbers associated with her Twitch account and the money that she's making. And I would be very shocked that if she stopped, and I'd be more shocked that if WWE tried to make her, she didn't say, well, sorry, see you around. I'm sitting at home making this money doing my streams, and it's, from what I hear, probably more than what WWE would pay her. So she's doing very, very well, and I would not expect to see her or really anybody else stop it.
Because one of the things I was curious about, because I ordered one cameo one time from a drag queen for a friend for them moving house, but like I'm not, it's just not really been my thing. But like, I mean, I imagine if you look at any wrestler, say Big E, that like, you can do your cameo, but you can't use our intellectual property. Like, I mean, as a fan, would they still want the cameo, but the wrestler can't say their wrestler name? Would that make a difference? I don't know.
Or maybe their catchphrase too.
Yeah, like, what are you allowed to say? I mean, if it was Daniel Bryan, I mean, if he went, hey, it's Bryan Danielson here, shout out to Sean and all his success at Fightful, I guess you can't really police that.
Yeah. And, I mean, we got one sarcastically from Roman Reigns. My boss paid for one. And, I mean, the thing is, it's a major revenue stream. I know people within the first two couple months of the pandemic outside of WWE who made 10 grand off a cameo. That's a good amount of money for these people who weren't getting bookings.
And the independent contract thing that I know comes up again and again and again. It seems like this is it's kind of opening that box again, which you don't really want to open.
Exactly. And that's why I'm surprised WWE did this. And you got Andrew Yang on you about it. That ain't good for WWE. And I don't think they would have issued a comment if not for Andrew Yang.
I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm curious to see if WWE eventually kind of back down on it or whether this gets messy. But I guess we'll find out. Before we go, though, we do have one last story that I wanted to talk about, which was NXT. They've been doing the Super Tuesday shows. There's rumors that they're going to move to Tuesdays. What can you tell us about potentially moving to Tuesday?
So it's funny. Back in June, maybe even late May, I got like a batch of news from the broadcast side of WWE. And I was told, hey, the draft's coming up in a couple months. It didn't. And I waited until they announced something. And then I ran the story about how it's now planned for October, but they did have a draft planned. Then they wanted to get live fans in like July, and it was in Lakeland, and that didn't work out, which I'm sure they're seething about AEW doing now. But also one of those was USA Network has floated the idea to NXT about doing Tuesdays, and WWE, what I had heard, has been receptive. I asked for some more color, and they said, well, they haven't immediately shot it down, which is receptive if you're WWE. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that would make sense. And then I had one of those same sources hit me up whenever the Tuesday shows were scheduled. Now, keep in mind, AEW and NXT, like 4 weeks five out of a 6 week stretch, they're not going head to head. And the numbers thus far have been great for both. Like, on nights that they don't belong on, people are tuning in and watching this more than when they're on a night they belong on. So if you're USA, you're like, okay, we get it. You're doing your silly little war. We would like 200,000 more fans watching our show and an opportunity to grow. As opposed to that, I was told that these two Tuesdays are a bit of a dry run, but not like a scheduled one. They weren't like, oh yeah, we got to see how it works. It was a benefit of circumstance of NHL being on the Wednesday nights. And they're like, well, we've thought about running Tuesdays anyway. Let's try to do it. And so far, so good. But that doesn't mean that they will switch nights, although it has been discussed and floated to WWE.
Because wasn't it last week where NXT cracked the top 10 for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, it'd been a while. And again, that was on a night that they don't belong on that night right now. That's not their normal night. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like if you're, I mean, because a lot of people want to watch both shows. They don't want to watch one or the other. And if you're in the UK, I mean, we kind of get shafted in NXT that we don't get to see it for 8 days because it doesn't go in the network for 8 days, unless you have BT Sport, where you can watch it live, which is pretty expensive. But yeah, I guess I think they should move to Tuesdays. I think it would just be a better move for them. But and do you think if they do move to Tuesdays, do you think AEW has got a good chance of cracking a million a few weeks in?
I think that they will crack a million if not the week that AEW or that NXT moves, but I think they'll do it within a month and a half. And also, they're going to have to build upon this All Out show because this week's number is very interesting to me. How will people tune in off of a show that wasn't white hot for AEW?
Yeah, Because I feel like there is people do want the answers to questions from the pay-per-view, but you know, I saw a lot of people talking about, you know, a lot of people not happy that MJF lost.
Yeah.
In the match that he did, how do they recover it? But it will be interesting. Well, listen, Sean, I think we've done almost an hour, and it's been a success. I think we've stayed friends, we haven't argued, not fallen
exactly.
Out.
You let me plug Fightful a little bit. I dig it.
Of course. Because the thing is, whenever we talk about these stories, obviously we're kind of, you know, doing a kind of summary in broad strokes, but you do sort of daily updates all the time with Fightful. What are the plugs? How can people, if they want to, you know, read more of the stories or watch the content or listen to the content, where can they get you?
Gosh, everywhere. We have multiple Twitter handles because we cover MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling. Fightful.com covers all that. We wanted to create a crossover site, but I know a lot of you just like wrestling, so FightfulWrestling.com is where to go. The most direct way to support us is FightfulSelect.com. Right now, it's a Patreon platform. Hopefully, by the end of the year, we're moving that online or on-site to be more of like a Wrestling Observer, PW, Insider Elite, whatever they call it, type of thing. Mm-hmm. But that's the most direct way to support us. I know a lot of people are like, I don't want to pay for wrestling news. Well, I didn't either. I didn't want to do it. But that's the way that a lot of newspapers are. It helps support us. It helps support my ability to hire staff, which allows me to go out and get more stories. And we're posting exclusive news over there every day. All this information I gave you today was on FightfulSelect.com first. And in addition, we've got like 6-7 extra shows. We cover New Japan, Ring of Honor, 205 Live, NXT, AEW, all that stuff over there. We've got Raw and SmackDown reviews behind the paywall as well, in addition to our free content. But I also do a Backstage Report podcast where I give you just 25 minutes of exclusive news. And I do a Q&A every week where you can ask me really anything you want about wrestling, about media, any of that good stuff. Fightful.com, FightfulSelect.com.
All the plugs. Well, I mean, I guess I should give some of our plugs because you might be coming to listen to this for Sean Ross Sapp and wonder who is the Scottish guy on the line. So you can follow loads of Inside the Rope stuff. We've just launched a new magazine where Bill Apter is actually writing in the magazine, which is very cool. So you can go and subscribe or buy the first copy at InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. We've also got a Patreon, which is really the best way to support anybody right now, especially given that we can't go out and do anything anywhere. It's patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And we've got a YouTube channel, over 173,000 subscribers, and we put content up there every week.
Send about 70,000 my way so I can get one of those cool buttons.
Well, listen, send us some stuff. We'll put it on the channel, redirect it to you. Because, I mean, the thing is, people who follow Fightful and people who follow Inside the Ropes, it's very similar kind of stuff in terms of the quality. And, like, I feel like people who are not familiar with Inside the Ropes or who are not familiar with Fightful will find that this is a new thing they want to get on board with. So do check all of that stuff out. Sean will be here next Monday again. And hopefully, it feels weird that in the pandemic there appears to be more wrestling news than there was before.
Yes.
Like
we became profitable for the first time the first month of the pandemic, which made me feel kind of gross, but it was on pace to happen that way anyway.
Listen, you got to make the moves, and you've been making the moves for years. It's finally paying off for you. So it's a good time. Well, listen, thank you everybody for listening. Let us know what you think on Twitter. We're going to do a hashtag Monday Night Live. So if you get any questions for us for next week, or you want to, you know, try and get us to out who that person was at the scrum, which we never will, then you can ask us. We just won't. Sean, I hope you enjoy your week, whatever you're up to.
Yeah, I'm actually, this is my first weekend off in months and months and months. There are no wrestling pay-per-views this weekend. There's not a UFC pay-per-view this weekend. We hired a great new MMA editor who's doing a lot of great stuff. So I'm looking forward to watching some American rules football.
I appreciate what you did there. And you did. Yes. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I've learned. Boy, have I learned over the past few months with all the Europeans that have popped up on my Twitter.
I remember my first time I ever went to America was Seattle for WrestleMania 19. When I was like 17 and I had a student loan, and I was like, I should go to WrestleMania. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
and it was like before broadband and stuff like that. So like I had to go to like an internet cafe to email my mum to be like, I'm not dead. And this American guy, and obviously American, was there. And he was like, where are you from? And I was like, I'm from Scotland. He was like, oh my God, I love Scotland. My favorite place in Scotland is Amsterdam. And I just nodded. And I was like, cool. He was so wrong. There was just no point in me even correcting him. So I appreciate you not saying soccer. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will see you next week.